Welcome to Energy Stew. This is Peter Roth, your host. And I'd like to ask you, how well versed are you on the topic of love? What an easy topic. Don't we all immediately have all the answers to it? Well, maybe not. Maybe we need to ask more questions and look at it in deeper ways and understand love in so many different contexts. And to help us understand these different contexts, we're going to be talking with a founding member of the Integral Institute. And we're going to talk about integral evolution and love with a man who I'm so impressed with that I really want him to talk to us about integral love, Tom Goddard. Tom, welcome to Energy Stew.
Thanks so much, Peter. It's great to be here.
So this is something that I know you love to talk about, is love and integral evolution. So what do we need to understand most about the topic of love in terms of our evolution?
Probably two things. First of all, that it is a hallmark has misled us. It's not a mushy feeling. Love is a choice. And that our capacity to choose it is ever evolving. Those two things together, I think, are at the heart of my understanding, such as it is, of love. And the really key discovery for me was that it's a choice. I can choose moment to moment to love. As Scott Peck said, we can like or not like, but the call of the universe is to love.
I agree with that, and there are different ways to hold that, to understand love and to actually activate it based on conditioning forces, because not all humans think alike. And historically, we've had to evolve a lot, and we're still evolving a lot because most humans don't think alike, and most humans on this planet represent one culture or another that can hold love in different ways. Mm-hmm. And so we're not understanding the world a lot because we're expecting most humans to think and behave like we do. Mm-hmm. And we don't see that. It's like, what's wrong? Why don't they talk about love the way I want them to talk about it? And for me, it's collective love. You know, it's called integral love. It's holistic. It's bringing love together in ways that is open to everything and everyone.
Right. Right. And I would say that the what makes integral love integral is the yearning for ever broadening sets of perspectives from which we love. If all I know is my family, I mean, and for humanity, most of our history, that's all I would know is immediate family and cousins. And if all I know is that, then my notions of love are around that rather limited perspective, at least compared to now, it's limited. But if I ever, as a species, ever evolve my notion of love, such that I can actually become, as integralists like to say, world-centric, then I'm going to have a different capacity to love because my very breadth of perspective is so much broader. It's integral.
Right. So would you call world-centric, was that the mm-hmm. phrase? I just see that simply as collective.
Right.
That we want everybody to love everybody in an open, heartful way, in an accepting and open-minded way, not only open-hearted. But when we look at history and we look at current cultures that represent, right now we're living in a time where many of the older cultures are very present, actively.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And we should talk about that, because integral evolution has different colors for different periods of time that our society has lived through, that has grown out of, to move forward to, let's say, higher and higher consciousness, and yet not everybody has come with it.
Right. No, and nor could they be expected to. I mean, each of us starts at zero. And then based on our genetics and our upbringing and the culture in which we're embedded, we advance in our own individual capacity to love,
right,
at a certain rate. So we all start at this kind of very, very primitive level of perspective.
Right. You know, I agree with you, but I just want to say that I think the zero has to do with love. It doesn't have to do with personality so much, but that babies are born totally open to love.
Absolutely, but they're constrained by their limited perspective. Love equals mom, and then love just cracks open just a little bit broader, and love equals mom and dad, and then a little bit broader, and mom equals mom, dad, and my siblings, and then uncles and aunts and cousins, and then, you know, the kids in school, and if I at a certain point get stuck in my identification with the folks I identify with at a certain level and stop expanding out, that then defines the limits of our perspective on love.
Right.
I think it was in the Upanishads, is one of my favorite lines, is where there is no other, there is no fear. And so that, what is other and what is we, evolves, hopefully, through an adult's lifetime. It also evolves in at the community level, and evolves at the species level. Here in the early 21st century, we have a broader view of we than we have at any point in our history. And yet, because we're individuals and we're not all evolving at the same rate, some of us have evolved our notion of we only so far. And therefore, much of the world is still other. And this last election, I was reading an analysis of, you know, people trying to figure out, well, what happened in 2016? And the word tribalism, a couple of nonpartisan social scientists said tribalism was on the ascendance.
Yes.
And so clusters of people identifying with each other as the we, and putting everything outside of that as other, and therefore a source of fear, describes a lot of the electoral behavior, particularly in those states that were swing states. And I think that that's a microcosm of a much broader notion. And yet at the same time, we are, as a species, evolving faster in terms of expansion of our notions of we than we ever have, almost forced to by the technological advances of our time. I mean, we can know about the suffering of a human being in Myanmar in instantly, same day.
Right.
I mean, I had a vague notion as a child of where Burma was on the map, had no idea about a people called the Rohingya. And now I can experience news that generates sympathetic suffering in me that happened earlier in the day in Myanmar about the Rohingya. And so we're being dragged into a notion of we that is bigger than we've ever experienced before.
Well, yes, and let's look at the word empathy, because I think a lot of love has to do with empathy. And many of us are collectively empathetic and can want good for everyone and feel the suffering of everyone. But tribal empathy is very different. Tribal is, I can only feel for you if you're a member of my tribe, otherwise I have to kill you.
Correct.
And that's why the Rohingyas are having such a problem, but even in our own country, we're becoming very tribal, and there's a lot of language of hate and killing, and there's so much that goes on here that is frightening to see, and it's all because tribes need tribal chieftains who are tribal warriors. They need to know they're protected from evil because there's a lot of fear involved with tribal thinking, and it limits our experience of love.
Right. And it doesn't help that there are two industries that have learned with great sophistication how to market fear, and that's the news media across the spectrum, and the politicians. And they seem to be in a kind of a synergistic dance where they are marketing fear, and which reinforces these tribal boundaries that so many of us feel in a way that we didn't feel as much when fear wasn't as weaponized as it is now.
Yeah, it sure is. You know, propaganda is king. and it's amazing how limited it looks to us, that you know, these forces, these tribal forces, are pointing so many warrior fingers at everybody. And it feels like it's all just headed towards calamity.
And I think we've made ourselves vulnerable. Humans, by we I mean humans, have made ourselves vulnerable by not keeping up with the information technology that is emerging all around us. I mean, if you look at what is going to happen in the next 10 years, now that the technology of being able to superimpose anybody's face into a video and have it impossible to detect. You know, this technology exists, and in about a year or two, it will be inexpensive and available to everybody. So I could take your face and have you spouting all sorts of things that have nothing to do with who you are, put it on the internet, and we as a species don't understand what is going on technologically. And so we're vulnerable to this weaponization of fear in a way that we probably haven't ever been.
Right. The fear mongers are learning, they're having more weapons.
Yeah, that's right.
And so we have to have this perspective of what we're headed towards and why. And the integral approach really brings it together, that these voices, these tribal voices that apparently need to be heard because they're not clear enough in their own minds that they're safe and that they can love everybody.
That's right. I had an interesting experience a few years ago. I led a retreat called the Integral Intensive. I led it a few times over the years, about 15 or so years ago. And what was clear in one of the exercises we did is that we would split the group, and I took a single issue. I think it was climate change that I used most frequently. And then I would say, all right, you people over here, and we would go through a meditative state to expand their consciousness to the largest place we could get them at that moment. That's half the group, and they would be the listeners. And the other half the group would, through a different kind of meditative process, we would get people at a particular level of consciousness, the colors that you refer to, like red. This is using one of two major color models, the spiral dynamics model. And red is kind of a very slightly larger than tribalistic, but kind of fiercely nationalistic. And the boundary between inside and outside is, you know, very sharp. And people would get into that position, and then I would give them a position to argue to the more expanded group. And then they would switch and go to a different level. We'd move to the next level up, which is blue, which is more what we have traditionally thought of in this country as nationalism, but not in the kind of same sense that red is, and larger truths are held more seriously rather than just the strong leader, and then do the same thing. They would argue the same thing, and then we'd have the rest of the group in this expanded thing. And what became so apparent is that one of the major things that distinguishes our capacity, our one level from the next, one level of consciousness from the next, has to do with who we fear, and how we fear, and what we fear. And that's utterly related to what is out there. Back to the Upanishads. What's out there? What is the other? And who am I and who are we? Who do I count as we? And the larger we get the we, the more out there and less tribal the fear gets. Like certainly people with very broad, world-centric, expansive views of humanity and the we-ness of their lives have fears, but what they fear are existential for the species, right, not existential for the tribe.
You can't become tribal about universal love. Right. You know, it's like, oh my gosh, if we can't all love everybody, we have to kill all the people who can't.
Right.
And we can't do that. So that's why this integral approach is so important, because what it says is, let's find common ground. Let's understand each other in ways that can soften, you know, the polarities, bring things together, you know, and integrate so that we can all understand each other better.
Right.
And maybe we can't for a while. Maybe actually our consciousness has to reach a newer level of openness that I think is happening. I think we're coming into a time of rising consciousness where we can see through the veil more and understand that we don't have to be so afraid.
I couldn't agree more, Peter. I tend to think of it in a bell curve of consciousness that's constantly moving toward higher consciousness. And it simply is that most of the species is still kind of slogging its, I mean, if you look at the entirety of the 7 billion of us, most of us are still at, by a long shot, are still living day to day at a tribal level. And the skinny upper end is at this world-centric level where universal love is possible. But that number is growing rapidly. The number of people who are at the rational level, kind of what Spiral Dynamics used to call, or calls orange, and into the green and yellow and second tier consciousness is higher than it's ever been. And I don't think we're going back. Now, I think this kind of steady movement of consciousness toward higher consciousness is moving the whole species, which is still tribal, along with it. And I think there's some kind of natural and expected resistance to that. No. This is not where we want to go. You know, I'm comfortable with my tribe, and I don't want to be dragged into, this is the rhetoric of politics these days. I don't want to be dragged into a tofu eating, you know, dystopia that no longer has football, and you know, it's nothing like what my tribe does.
I agree that we need to hold some tribal awareness, but not based so much on fear. It needs to be based more on love, tribal love, and so move to a higher level of consciousness where we have more compassion for our history, the inadequate history, and understand what we have to change because of that, how so many members of our society have not been respected enough, and like women, and are now needing to come into their power, and all kinds of minorities and just, you know, all kinds of people who have different lifestyles, and integrate everybody in a way that is more wholesome. But by understanding our history, understanding how we haven't thought well, how we haven't figured it out. And I think, unfortunately, to do this, it's more of the sewage has to be shown. You know, we're seeing so much toxicity now in our society, but I think that helps us have more tools to work with.
Absolutely. I would say one of the things from an integral perspective that we really need to learn that we haven't learned very well is at the higher levels of consciousness to stop rejecting lower levels of consciousness as something, as though we could pretend to leave our tribalism behind. And I love what you said about, like, we still need our tribes. But there can be a tendency at certain higher levels of consciousness to imagine that, well, I'm no longer, I don't have any traces of beige or red or blue in me. I don't do that anymore. I'm now up here in green or yellow. And dismissive of very real needs. And it's not the very real needs of other people who are red at the red level. It's right. My own red. It's to recognize that I still have my own earlier levels of consciousness within me. It's not like baseball where you go from home plate to first base, leaving home plate entirely behind. And then from first to second, leaving first base entirely behind. That's not the way consciousness works. We start here, and then one of the key lines that Ken Wilber popularized in the integral world is transcend and include. He didn't invent it. I think that may have been Gebser. Right. But we still have all of that tribalism and all of that kind of very primitive family-oriented stuff in here. And all we've done when our expanses, our consciousness has expanded is to add new perspectives to our younger perspectives.
The child. Love that. Yeah. You know, I grew up and I traveled in foreign countries when I was a kid, really appreciating how cultures in those days were much more authentic. You know, they weren't just there for tourists. They were actually people were living in those original ways. And I loved it so much, but then we're becoming so homogenized, and I think there's a fight against that. And in my early days, many decades ago, I was a student. I read Krishnamurti's work, and he always said we have to get rid of nationalities, flags. You know, he wanted everything to be collective. And it's like, well, you know, it's too idealistic, you know, and Taoism is that way too. It says, you know, let's just be all in our original selves every moment. And then we don't even need governments because we can all depend on each person being authentic to their true hearts and true beliefs that are universal love. Well, that's great to talk about, but we're not there yet. So, and no, nor would it be an interesting life if we were there.
Precisely. Precisely. I'm not even sure that's what the end of the story should be. It's not the end of my story as I see the expansion of consciousness. Certainly the ability to expand consciousness so that I see that all my beliefs about separation are rooted in fallacy. That's worth striving for. That's worth practicing. However, I think to say that that's where the story ends, you hit the nail on the head, Peter. It would be boring. I think the fabric of being, I'll quote Mark Goffney on this, the fabric of being is seamless. We are, in fact, one. That's the truth. Right. But it's not featureless. Right. It's not featureless. So if you take expansion of our consciousness all the way out so that I identify as the one. And then you add the unique perspective that each of us on this planet has. Then you've got unique self. And now that's interesting. If I see the world as not separate, if I see you as not separate from me, but that you and I have...
Well, we can love the difference in each person.
Exactly. Then you are not a threat to me. Your uniqueness can't threaten my uniqueness because we are unique.
Right. So it's really about getting rid of the hate language and the fear language
That's right.
And bring us back to the joy of Vive la Différence.
Exactly. I mean, in fact, I just wrote a piece, a short essay this week. I've been musing on one of the many musical instruments in my house. It's an Indian instrument called an esraj, and it has four strings that you play with a bow, and then it has 15 strings underneath that are called sympathetic strings. And each of those sympathetic strings is tuned a half step apart. And if you tune any one of them incorrectly, a whole array of harmonics is missing from the capability of that instrument to play it. If you don't tune the D sharp sympathetic string to D sharp, but instead let it fall to D, then there's a whole set of harmonics available only on a D sharp tuned string that vanish. And if we see ourselves that way, then all of a sudden we are part of this gorgeous instrument, each playing a distinct, unique part.
So let's honor that in everyone. So this was wonderful talking with you, Tom. And I'm sure we'll be talking some more too, because there's no end to observation and insight. So I want to thank you for the depth of it that you've been able to bring us.
Peter, it's been a delight.
And I don't know if there's a website or a place that you want people to visit.
Sure, integralcompany.com. You can find me there and contact me through that. You can schedule a conversation with me by looking for the conversations tab, integralcompany.com. Try to make it easy.
Thanks, Tom Goddard. It's been so wonderful talking with you.
And thank you, Peter.
And this is Peter Roth, your host of Energy Stew. I can be reached at peter@heartriver, heartriver.org. I'd love to hear from you. And thanks so much for listening.